I truly believe that we can be people of faith and accept this evidence in all aspects of our life and still speak into the modern world. If we can accept the evidence, we have taken ourselves completely out of the conversation.
Welcome to Dangerous Dogma, the authority on questioning authority. I'm Brian Kaler, president of Word and Way. You can learn more about us at wordandway.org. In this episode, we're going to have a conversation with Janet Kellogg-Ray about her book, The God of Monkey Science, People of Faith in a Modern Scientific World. Janet is a university biology professor and a science communicator, and I was really excited to have her on the program to talk about her informative, important, and entertaining book. In this conversation, and especially in her book, she's helping us understand what we've seen with science denialism during the COVID-19 pandemic and how it has particularly been a problem in evangelical churches and communities. Before we jump into that conversation, I want to remind you that if you haven't subscribed yet to Word and Way's award-winning email newsletter, A Public Witness, you really should. You'll get in-depth reporting and analysis at the intersection of faith and politics, including things about science and COVID-19, delivered straight to your inbox. Learn more, start reading, and subscribe today at publicwitness.wordandway.org. And now here's my conversation with Janet Kellogg-Ray on the God of Monkey Science. Well, Janet, first of all, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Excited to talk to you.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to talk with you about your excellent book, The God of Monkey Science, People of Faith in a Modern Scientific World. And I mean, I knew from the moment I saw the title that I was intrigued and wanted to read this. And then it turned out to go places that I didn't expect that I enjoyed very much. So first of all, let's maybe set the stage a little bit, because you do this in the very beginning of the book of where this book comes from. So why did you decide that this was the book that you wanted to write?
Well, I had actually, at the time I got the motivation or the inspiration for this book, I had just actually released my first book, a book that was about a defense of the theory of evolution, specifically targeted toward the non-scientist and people of faith. So it was in that context that I got this first book about evolution that was just being launched. And then the second big thing that was on everybody's mind was the pandemic. And so the inspiration for the title and the topic of this book came early in 2021. The vaccines for COVID had not been released too terribly long. And I was in a discussion group with multiple people, and someone had brought up the fact that the governor of my state of Texas had just taken away or had just revoked the mask mandate for our state. Well, you know, at the time, less than 7% of Texans had had an opportunity to be vaccinated. So there were several, you know, it was a very civil discussion. Several of us, you know, had chimed in and said, you know, we're a little worried. Is this jumping the gun a bit when so few people have had the opportunity to be vaccinated? Well, you know, as it happens when you express an opinion publicly, there are going to be those who disagree with you. And so, you know, outside this discussion, one of the people in this chat said something along the lines of, there she goes again, Janet and her monkey god science. Well, this honestly made me laugh. I wasn't offended because I know the background of this person. This person was in a class that I taught one time about Christianity and evolution. And I know at the time she called it monkey god science. But what I was intrigued about, you know, it made sense in the context of evolution, I guess. But this was the context of a worldwide health crisis, a pandemic. We weren't talking about evolution. We were talking about masking and vaccinations and mask mandates and those kinds of things. So I was interested. Why would my stance on science in the midst of a pandemic be called monkey god science? And so that's what dropped me down the rabbit hole of the new book, The God of Monkey Science. And before long, I found out that it was really a Venn diagram of sorts, that among those who, people of faith, who deny the evidence for evolution, there is this big circle coming in and this huge overlap between people of faith who deny all things pandemic, who were most resistant to vaccines and the science, and then dropping down into it, unmistakably, was another circle of people who were resistant to any of the evidence for human involvement in climate warming and climate change. And so that was my motivation for the book, to look at the history, the background, the politics and religious drama that got us to where we are, evangelicals specifically, and even more specifically, white evangelicals, in this kind of this toolkit of denial between evolution and pandemic science and climate science.
Well, I'm glad that you went down this rabbit hole, because it is an excellent book. And
thanks.
I think one thing I want to do also make sure we set the stage is introduce people a little bit more to you as someone who's coming from this, both from the science perspective, and as you've already alluded to the fact that you were teaching biology, but then also, as you talk about in the book, you grew up in evangelical church and that you're trying to talk to your people here.
Absolutely. The church that I grew up in was a very conservative church, would be considered evangelical, although we did not own that particular label. I grew up in the mainline Churches of Christ, and church was absolutely central to my family's life. Our friends were all from church. Our social lives revolved around church. And it was honestly, a wonderful, warm upbringing. And probably, the most scarring part of that upbringing was that I didn't get to see The Wizard of Oz until I was an adult, because we went to church three times a week, twice on Sunday, and The Wizard of Oz before days and on-demand streaming, only broadcast on Sunday night. But other than that, it was a good upbringing. It was a warm upbringing, very family-oriented upbringing. And in my church, I can't honestly remember a time that evolution was denigrated from the pulpit, because a seven literal day creation was just the default. We would have no more have questioned that than we would have questioned the existence of Jesus. But then a very life-changing event happened in my young life. I was in seventh grade, and believe it or not, in those days, science was not required. It was an elective in seventh grade in Texas. And so I decided I wanted to take choir because it sounded fun. But my dad was a teacher at the school, and he decided he did not like the lack of discipline in the choir room. So he voluntold me that I was going to take the science elective. And I credit him to this day for changing the trajectory of my life. For a middle school science course, it was phenomenal. We went through all of the different animal groups, and it was such an eye-opener for me. Because in my young experience, animals were things like puppies and kitties and cows and sheep and goats. But I'm being introduced to aspects of the animal world that I had never been aware were actual animals, like sea stars and worms and mollusks and insects, that all of these were considered animals. And then more than that, we did real, live, very specific dissections of these animals. And I absolutely know I had no vocabulary at all to express these thoughts. But I definitely remember having the thoughts that these animals are connected in some way beyond just the syllabus and just the classroom, that these systems that I'm seeing throughout all these groups of animals seem to be modifications and reworkings and remodelings of the same system. And these animals truly seem to be related. But again, I had no vocabulary, no background to even express those questions. And so fast forward, I was actually a biology major in university, and we conveniently avoided the topic of evolution. I went to a Christian university, which I love, still love. Our professor told us, here it is in the textbook, you need to know about it. And that was our evolution education at that point. So again, fast forward a few more years after graduation, and the second change in trajectory of my life. A few years after my husband and I graduated, we were both biology majors. One of the most beloved professors in the department, in fact, I taught labs for him. He was one of my favorite professors. I taught labs for him for a few years as an undergrad, was the target of a young earth creationist with no ties at all to my university, none at all. And he decided to take down the careers of this, my professor, and one other professor, because by this time, they were both men of faith, but they were also men of science. And they had become more overt about teaching evolution to the majors as the foundational theory of biology. It destroyed the careers of the guy who I taught for. The other guy was a little more crusty old dude, and he survived. But it destroyed this professor. He was humiliated to be brought up in the wider population, and it got lots of publicity as this man who was teaching atheism to these fine Christian students. He ended up resigning. And unfortunately, passed away not too many years after that. I had the opportunity a few years ago to talk to a professor, a retired professor, who was actually on staff at the time, on faculty at the time. And he said the ironic thing is that this guy was so religiously conservative. He squeaked, but he was a man of science, and he taught science. And so it was at that point that I decided to take a deep dive on my own. I was never really sold on a young earth. You know, I had just kind of tried to close my eyes and squint one of them and try to make the days of creation meet the fossil record. And so an old earth wasn't the big leap for me, but I began at that point to read both people of faith and secular books, secular materials on the evidence for evolution. You know, I started writing a blog. By this point, I had been working on a PhD. Not too long after that, I started teaching science and biology at a large state university. And, you know, the rest is just history. You know, I had the biology background. And with that, you know, reading the actual evidence for the theory, and then with this background in mind of, you know, what is so heinous about this theory that would cause this godly man to lose his career at a Christian university. I'm ecstatic to say that not too long after that, the science faculty at my university stood up and said, you know, we're not a Bible college. We are a university, and we are going to teach science. And to this day, this university teaches evolution as the foundational theory of biology from day one in their biology classes. But unfortunately, it took that tragic event to bring it to the forefront. But that's kind of, in a nutshell, my interest in the particular topic of biological evolution, and particularly how evolution has been received by people of faith.
And so then the other kind of key issue then, I mean, it's great to have your personal story and it comes in the book, which really adds to it. But then also then, before we get into COVID itself, the idea of science denialism is really important for kind of understanding what it is that you're pushing back against, particularly as it is in evangelical circles. And so I know you spent some time early on kind of explaining what you mean by that term. So what's happening here with science denialism, particularly with evangelicalism? And then we'll kind of move into how we've seen that, not just with evolution, but also more recently with the pandemic.
Is fascinating to me. You know, even going back to what most people think is ground zero for religion and science, the Galileo event. The Galileo event was not about science. Galileo didn't hurt the church's science feelings. Galileo hurt the church's theological feelings. The problem was that if the earth wasn't the center of the universe, then humans were no longer the center of it all, and we were no longer the apple of God's eye, and all of Christianity just falls to the ground. And so it was not about evidence. On to the 20th century, and what is called the trial of the century by some, at least the science trial of the century, the Scopes trial. And again, the Scopes trial was not about science evidence. In fact, a lot of people are surprised to learn that no science evidence was entered into testimony and no scientist testified at the Scopes trial. You know, instead, it was William Jennings Bryan, who was this great orator. He was a politician. People loved to hear him speak. You know, if he were alive today, he would have his own cable talk show. You know, he was just very popular. And when he argued against evolution, he didn't argue from an evidence standpoint. He argued by saying, to the contrary, that there's no evidence for it and that scientists don't even support it. He characterized those who support evolution as enemies of the Bible. And then he also made the point that because those who are against evolution are in the majority, then it's violating their rights when evolution is taught in the public schools. And so from Galileo to the Scopes trial, science denial was never about the evidence. It was about theology. And it remained about theology until we get to the late 1970s, early 1980s. During this time, there were several creationist organizations that came into being with the goal of changing that to make it about evidence. And so this phrase was coined creation science. So these new organizations were created in order to find evidence for creation science. Well, it became obvious right away, in short time, that there was no evidence and that evolution could not be disproved with evidence. So an abrupt change in direction occurred with creationists in the early 1980s because evolution could not be disproved or thrown out because of the evidence. Evolution then was couched as the source of all cultural evils. In the 1980s, evolution was the root cause of abortion and homosexuality, school shootings, even disobedient children. And so this became the front of fighting against evolution. Evolution, instead of being fought on the scientific grounds, was now being fought as a front in culture wars. And it's this version of creationism that was born out of the 1980s that has formed modern young Earth creationist movement. And unfortunately, it's also the form of creationism that Americans have exported outside our country. When you find young Earth creationism in other parts of the world, it's this version, this cultural front version of evolution that you find. And so when science is no longer about the evidence, when evolution was no longer about the evidence, but it was the source of cultural evils, it's not a big jump then to bring that culture war, science as a front in the culture war, into other areas of science.
So let's talk now about COVID. I mean, so you kind of talk about, you mentioned already, you finish a book, and then of course you're one of those unlucky authors that had like the worst time to drop a book with a pandemic. So sorry.
Right.
But then as you're, trying to, promote your book about evolution, you're also then having this public engagement. You were blogging and commenting about stuff happening with COVID. And I tell you, I mean, there were so many times when I was reading through your book that it resonated so much with all of the things that I was seeing, some of the things that we were trying to write about and push back against, the theology and the Christian arguments. And so what happened? I mean, and I know you wrote a whole book, and we don't have time to cover all the arguments, but what happened that like evangelicals were the least likely to mask, the least likely to get vaccinated, the most likely to think that COVID was fake and made up, even though millions of people are dying. I mean, what happened?
Well, just a lot. But just before I jump into that, I just want, and this is discussed in length, in depth in the book, but when we're talking about evangelicals, we're not just talking about where you go to church. Evangelical definition has definitely changed, particularly in the last decade. There are Catholics, there are Mormons, there are people who don't even go to church who identify as evangelical. So I just want to put that out there. So what happened? What happened with the COVID? You have to understand that for decades, since the 80s and before, we have been telling evangelical Christians and those who identify as evangelical Christians or those who have evangelical leanings, regardless of the religion that they identify with, we've been telling these people that scientists can't be trusted. We have told them for decades that scientists were hiding evidence for creation. We have been told for decades that scientists were lying to us, literally lying to us about the evidence for evolution. So it is no surprise that as we enter into a worldwide health crisis, that scientists are suspect. Think about the time before the 1980s, late 70s, during the polio pandemic. Scientists were our heroes. Scientists were our heroes during the race to space. But when science was made a front in the culture war, scientists became the enemy. They were faking evolution. They were faking fossils. They were hiding evidence. And a lot of this is documented in the Monkey God book. In addition, we had been told for decades that scientists want you to believe in evolution because they want you to be atheists like they are, as if all scientists were atheists. And so here comes a pandemic, and they want us to believe these epidemiologists. They want us to believe scientists from the National Institutes of Health. And all of a sudden, Dr. Fauci, Dr. Francis Collins are all the devil. They're all demonized because they are trying to tell us to shut down our churches, to wear masks, to not meet in large groups in the pre-vaccine days. Well, they are wanting us to turn our back on God instead of trusting in God to keep us safe. Faith over fear. How often did we hear that? They're asking us to put our faith in science. They're asking us to put our faith in science. And so it's not a surprise that we have enculturated people of faith to not trust science, to not trust the evidence, to not believe scientists. And then when something becomes part of a culture war, then we have this entire background to approach it. You know, we're not debating gravity and we're not debating photosynthesis. You know, we're debating things like the approach to a pandemic or the approach to climate science. And it's not a surprise that these particular issues have become politicized. And so you see this whole intermeshing between Christian nationalism, politics, and science denial. So whenever an area of science becomes a part of politics, you're going to see this playbook pulled out of scientists can't be trusted. Scientists are lying to us. Scientists want you to be atheist. The whole playbook comes in when an area of science begins to overlap with politics.
You know, I think something that you just mentioned there is so important to think about that. I mean, the issues, the problems that we saw in response to COVID from evangelicals wasn't something that was just that year, or like not something that we could have put out a quick message and gotten everybody on board. But this was something that because of decades of being discipled into a certain mm-hmm. perspective, right? And so the time to have prepared our faith communities for COVID wasn't in 2020. It was in 1985 and it was in 1993. And it was like all these decades mm-hmm. of not getting people ready was a deadly theological, mm-hmm. you know, shortcoming in our congregations. And I just think that's so important to realize that we still now have a lot of work to do, you know, before the next pandemic. And it might take us decades to get people ready for that theologically, scientifically.
Right. And, you know, there was a study that was just fascinating to me about how this decades of science denial within the evangelical community has far impact beyond the church walls or even beyond those who identify as evangelicals or have evangelical leanings. There was a survey of public school biology teachers regarding their teaching of evolution in a public classroom. Now, it's very concerning to find out that 13% of public biology teachers admit to overtly teaching creationism, but that wasn't the most concerning aspect of this study, the survey that came out. To me, it was that 60% of public school biology teachers soft pedal it. They don't take a strong stand either way because they don't want the community and parental clapback that there could be because evolution is such hot button cultural issue. So regardless of whether the teacher personally accepts the evolution, the evidence for evolution, 60% of public biology teachers don't take a strong stand either way. And you know, and the worst part of that scenario is it usually looks something like you don't have to believe this, just learn it for the test. That seems innocuous, but it's not. Because what we have done is that we have trained, again, generations of students that science isn't about evidence. Science is about beliefs and values and opinions. So here we are in the year of our Lord 2020, 2021. And what do we hear? I did my own research. My opinion about masks is just as good as your opinion about masks. My opinion about shutdowns is just as good as any epidemiologist's opinion about shutdowns, because we have trained generations of school children, whether they are religious or not. Science is not a matter of evidence. It's a matter of opinions or beliefs or values. And so, you know, the roots of denial go deep. And you're right, we were not ready for a public crisis in the 21st century. And we're still not ready to address human involvement in the climate or any other science issue that comes up in the future that becomes a political or a cultural hot button.
And in a society where almost everything gets politicized, I mean, that's mm-hmm. a pretty alarming, you know, note of warning
right.
there.
Right. Well, you know, we are, you know, Americans, and we're all about our rights, and we like to export that around the world, as I said. But since the time of the Scopes trial, particularly in the 70s and 80s, we saw court case after court case and hearings in state houses, even in the Supreme Court, federal courtrooms, fighting for the right to teach creationism, to offer an alternative to evolution by teaching creationism alongside evolution. And time again, federal courts, Supreme Court have ruled that creationism is religion and cannot be taught in public schools. So we switched gears and we fought for the right to teach intelligent design in public schools as an alternative to evolution. Again, that was thrown out as a religious concept by a federal court. But we still haven't given up on pushing for our rights to teach a religious concept in public schools. And so there have been a myriad of cases in state houses, but mainly it takes place in school boards, both state and local school boards. And so there's this concept of fighting for rights that we have become accustomed to, fighting for the right to teach these religious concepts in public school. And so here comes a pandemic. And what did we hear? The government is violating our constitutional right to freedom of religion. It did not become a fight about evidence. It became a fight for our rights. And when it becomes a fight for our rights, it becomes political.
Yeah, so this is one of the things I want to, you have a chapter you titled, "They'll Know We Are Christians by Our Constitutional Rights." And this is a good point to note, because I think it's an important argument to unpack, but I also wanted to highlight that, I mean, I hope people pick up the book. It's really helpful, it's really interesting, and it's also fun, which I'll be honest, I didn't expect in a book about science and theology that it's also, there are moments that I laughed out loud. And so in that particular chapter, as you're talking about like this argument for freedom and rights, you know, it seemed to take over facts and as well as even like just good solid theology. You know, here's how you describe it in one point. It said, it wasn't long before evangelicals adopted a popular political slogan and made it their own. In the muted colors art of a classic children's Bible storybook, we see Jochebed and Miriam knee-deep in the river, putting chubby baby Moses into a whisker basket. The caption reads, "Moses's mother did not comply." I admit to a giant eye roll when I saw that one in my Facebook news feed. Becky, it's a mask. No one is trying to throw Junior into the Nile. And I laughed. That was great. But I mean, I was seeing these Facebook memes, right? And, you know, and everything was in, not only was it put as this, our right and our individual freedom, but then also like, and this was us following God. We must resist anything that any government or scientist is telling us. Otherwise, we're disobeying God. I mean, that's a hard argument to come back against.
Right. And it also became an indictment of your faith. if you were wearing a mask, you weren't putting your faith in God. If you were shutting your church down, you know, you are not putting your faith in God. I will not mention names to protect the guilty, but I know a couple who have a very successful business, leaders in their church. And during the pandemic, they had a big sign on their business door, off the business door, that said, not masks are optional, but this is a mask-free zone. And I did not see this myself, but a mutual friend saw it. You know, this friend had recently and far too early lost her husband to cancer. And that struck her. And what she said to these business owners was, well, you know, that hits differently when you have been caring for someone who is desperately ill and undergoing chemotherapy. That hits differently. And I said, what was the response? And she just said, deer in the headlights, no response. No response. And, you know, the same, you know, I also talk about this in the book, that the Great Barrington, what they call it, the Great Barrington Doctrine, Great Barrington Decree, I can't remember what the third word was. But basically, it was a plan that came out of a libertarian think tank that was trying to convince everyone that the solution to the pandemic, and by the way, this was early, this was still in 2020, months before even medical professionals had access to a vaccine, had tried to convince that the way forward was to open up the economy and just let herd immunity take over, protect the vulnerable, and no longer would our economic rights be violated. I was shocked at how many people that I personally knew and personally knew from social media and their opinions on all things religious backed that position. You know, it was as if, you know, let's just throw the vulnerable under the bus. Number one, just the whole love your neighbor aspect. But number two, just the lack of understanding of what is meant by herd immunity and how we actually achieve herd immunity. You know, the science part of me, the Christian part of me didn't know where to begin on that because it was violating all of it. And I do have audible eye rolls. I admit I have audible eye rolls. And, you know, it took a lot of self control on my part to use pseudonyms in those stories. But I did.
We'll be right back with the rest of this conversation. But first, I want to remind you that you should subscribe to Warden Way's award-winning e-newsletter, A Public Witness. It will help you make sense of the world of faith, culture, and politics. Learn more and subscribe today at publicwitness.wardenway.org. And now, back to our conversation. Earlier in our conversation, and you talk about this in the book, you invoke the phrase that we all heard, the slogan we heard, faith over fear. And you just talked about, you know, being offended, being upset, both as a scientist and as a Christian. And, you know, that faith over fear, it goes back to that basic premise that faith and science are inherently at odds, right? And so what's happening here that we saw in COVID, perhaps in a way that is much more striking even than we see with debates about evolution, of this idea of, you know, why is it or how is it that we can get past this understanding that, you know, wearing a mask or trusting the science or getting a vaccine that's been scientific, gone through the entire scientific, you know, rigorous process, isn't the opposite of faith? How do we get past this?
That's a big question. And one that I am hopefully going to address more in depth in the theoretical third book that's living in my head right now. You know, there are science literacy reasons, because I will say, you know, as a science educator, science communicator, were there breakdowns in science communication during the COVIDs? Absolutely. It was a novel virus. It was a novel pandemic. And so did we always communicate in the ways that we should? No, absolutely we didn't. But it also points to a serious lack of science literacy across the board. You know, not being able to differentiate between authority and expertise, that authority isn't always who we should listen to. There are people in positions of authority, but they are not experts in the fields to which they are speaking. And again, we have conditioned ourselves over the decades. You know, there are definitely not a lot. They're in the vast minority, but there are people with lots of letters after their names, and even with impressive university credentials, who do not accept evolution. But if you dig a little further into their positions, inevitably you will find things like the reason I reject evolution is for a faith reason, or I base my positions on my beliefs, not evidence. But you have to dig pretty deep to find those testimonies of those people. What the general public sees is someone with a PhD behind their name and a transcript from a big university, and this person is speaking with authority. But are they speaking with expertise? You know, there are examples after examples of this in the fight against evolution. And again, we see it with misinformation during the COVID pandemic. People speaking with authority, politicians, talk show hosts, pastors, that were speaking definitely from a position of authority, but they were not experts in the fields to which they spoke. I have a story or two in the book about a group that got a lot of airtime early on in the pandemic. They called themselves America's Frontline Doctors. They were, I think, for the most part, medical doctors of some sort, but they stood on the steps of the Supreme Court just a month or two into the pandemic, and we're touting all sorts of pseudoscience, all sorts of unsubstantiated claims about different alternative treatments and why you didn't need to mask and why you needed to take hydroxychloroquine, you know, and they stood there at the Supreme Court with their white coats on, with all the optics of authority. They were not speaking from areas of expertise. None of them were epidemiologists. None of them were infectious disease docs. And they don't even necessarily have to be those things if they are quoting the experts, you know, with some clarity there and with some accuracy there. And so, you know, I think a big part of it is that we, you know, have a lack of science literacy, but we also take people like our pastors, like our Bible school teachers, as figures of authority, and just assume they would never steer us wrong.
As we wrap up our conversation, I mean, one of the things I wanted to ask then is, you know, what can pastors, what can clergy do to help combat this science denialism, this culture? I mean, this is one of the things, you know, Word Away we did in 2021, in the summer, when the Delta strain of COVID took off, it spiked first in Missouri, which is where I'm based. And we got hundreds of clergy in Missouri, public statement that they all signed on to, encouraging people to get vaccinated. and at least sparked some conversations in the media and in some local congregations. But again, as we've been talking about, that was, you know, after we were already kind of baked in with a lot of these perspectives. So what's your advice to clergy besides, you know, picking up your book and reading it? We'll tell them all to start there. But what else, what can we do in our churches to give me some hope.
Well, you know, unfortunately, you know, I'm afraid we've got a lot of remediation to do. We've got a lot of remediation to do. You know, I read a book recently by an evolutionary biologist. I also heard this author on a podcast interviewed, a fascinating book and fascinating interview. This person, I have no idea if this person, this author is a person of faith at all. I don't know where he would fall down on it. But he is not one of those people that denigrates people of faith. And so he talked about this in his book and then again on the interview where he said that when people of faith approach him about, you know, evolution is not true, evolution is fake, there's no evidence for it, I was so disconcerted about his answer. He chooses just not to engage. He will answer a question, but he says overtly, I don't try to convince them. He literally just does not engage. And so what this said to me on a broader spectrum of science denial is that people of faith, by our science denial, have taken ourselves completely out of the broader conversation. We've taken ourselves completely out of any conversation about a contemporary science issue or an issue that could come up in the future. And by taking ourselves completely out of the conversation of modern evidence, by denying modern scientific evidence, who's going to listen to us? You know, who's going to listen to us if we have something from a position of faith to say about the ethics of something? Who's going to listen to us? I mean, I'm not going to listen to a flat earther tell me the best ways to address climate change. You know, I'm probably not going to let a flat earther, you know, do my taxes or whatever. I'm just not going to. That person, by their denial, in my estimation, has taken themselves completely out of any broader conversation about science. And so, you know what, I would just encourage pastors, teachers, people of faith that are concerned about this, that would like to see a voice from a position of faith, just have some honest conversations. You know, we can deny it, we can pretend it's all a conspiracy, we can make it all political, or we can speak as people of faith in a modern world. So, you know, what might that look like? You know, what does that look like? I've spent a lot of time thinking about that. What would it look like to accept science evidence? Accept the evidence, the consensus of the scientific evidence, and not try to do all these mental gymnastics to explain it away, to make our theological point make sense. You know, maybe that looks like, okay, humans share common ancestry with all life. Okay, given that evidence, how do we rise above our natural evolutionary instincts to put ourselves first? How do we put our neighbor's needs alongside our own needs? How do we protect the most vulnerable in our communities? How do we rise above our natural evolutionary instincts for self-preservation to think about others? How do we, as creatures completely connected to all life on this planet, we are part of creation. We are completely connected. We share ancestry with it all. Yet, people of faith believe that we are tasked by God to be God's image bearers in creation. So what does that look like? What does it look like for those of us tasked with being God's representatives on earth, yet we are deeply connected to all of creation, to all of the earth? What does that look like? You know, problem solving. Germ theory is real, guys. It's real. So in the face of another health crisis, how best do we spend our community's resources? Do we spend our contribution money hiring attorneys to keep our doors open? Or do we go out into our communities and find those who can't work from home, the elderly, the most vulnerable, and use our resources that way? Do we put our rights aside to look at the most vulnerable among us? You know, I believe with all my heart, there is a place for people of faith in this modern scientific world. But by denying science evidence, whether it's in a pandemic, whether it's with the very foundations of biological evolution, which, by the way, underpins all modern medicine that we are happy to receive, new cancer research, new cancer treatments, all rely on the same genetic evidence that tells us that evolution is a fact, but that's a whole other conversation. But I truly believe that we can be people of faith and accept this evidence in all aspects of our life and still speak into the modern world. If we can accept the evidence, we have taken ourselves completely out of the conversation.
There's so much more we could talk about. And so I will encourage people to pick up the book, The God of Monkey Science, People of Faith in a Modern Scientific World. Janet, thanks so much for writing the book and for joining us on the program. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I love the conversation. Thanks.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Dangerous Dogma. You can find more information and links in the show notes at dogma.wordandway.org. And don't forget to check out our website, wordandway.org, to learn more about our other offerings, including A Public Witness, a subscriber e-newsletter to help you make sense of faith, culture, and politics. If you've enjoyed this episode, I hope that you will share it with your friends on Facebook and head over to iTunes or your favorite podcast platform and write a positive review. It really will help more people to find the show. If you'd like to give to support this program, we greatly appreciate it. And all you have to do at wordandway.org is hit the donate button. And whatever you give there will help support the production of this podcast, as well as our website, monthly magazine, and other offerings. If you have any comments or feedback about this program, you can send those to me at bkaylor@wordandway.org. Thanks for listening.